every episode of this podcast is about true things that have happened at some point or another on this planet. Each episode is different than the next, and they are each centered around stories that are odd, outlandish, or of the occult. This podcast will include foul language. This podcast may also include themes of graphic content such as murder, rape, or gore. Listener's discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Seven Circles. I am Autumn, and this is...
Dan. Wait, why did I not write something more interesting?
I don't know, why did you not write something more interesting?
I don't know, but I guess that boat has sailed now.
It is sailed.
Yeah, I usually have something funny to say there, and I say funny. That's subjective, of course. Something I think is funny, but yeah. Anyway.
Today we have a fun story for you. The last two episodes were more on the serious side, and we felt like it was time for a break. So let's get weird!
Let's get weird!
Yeah!
Oh, jeez! Also, I made caprinas, so there's a good chance I'm going to be very drunk very soon.
A caprina is just some rum mixed with some limes and some simple syrup, and that's it. And he has a big old honking-ass glass.
It's not just any old rum, Autumn. It's cachaça.
Cachaça.
It's the national cocktail of Brazil.
Oh.
And it is delicious.
Yeah. So...
maybe we should just get into the episode. What do you think?
Let's do that. This is the tale of Spring-Heeled Jack.
Who was he, Autumn? Where did he come from?
Nobody knew who the fuck he was or where he came from.
Was he an alien? Or a demon? Was he a time traveler? Was he simply a bored, rich aristocrat?
I don't know. Let's find out. He was first sighted in the year 1887 on the streets of London. This fucking guy would just run up to women who were walking alone and attack them. He would shred their clothes, feel them up, then hop the fuck over a fence. The attacks would usually happen in sudden flurries of random aggression, and they were usually over as soon as they started.
I'm invested. Go on.
This story is true.
Which I did not know when I suggested we do this supposedly more light-hearted topic next. Like, what I thought was an old folktale or myth is suddenly both real and rapey. So, you're welcome.
You're welcome. Sometimes these things happen when we pick a topic, you know? We think we're gonna go into it writing about one thing, but we end up writing about something totally different.
Anywho.
There were multiple eyewitness accounts of Spring-Heeled Jack through the mid to late 1800s. This story sounds bonkers, but I think this is where the phrase, "you can't make that shit up," originated.
Of all the things in this world that phrase could have stemmed from, I'm not sure a weird horny guy ripping chicks' clothes off and honking their honkers really qualifies as beyond the realm of imagination, Autumn.
Fair enough. One of the first recorded accounts was from a servant called Mary Stevens. She was walking home from work one evening, all alone, minding her own damn business. As Mary walked past a darkened alley, a man jumped out at her from the shadows. She said he grabbed her arms and that his hands were cold and clammy. She said that it felt as if a dead man was touching her.
That was just his raping gloves.
She said that he threw her against a wall and began to tear her bodice to shreds. Mary began to scream at this point, and just like that, the man raced away into the darkness, leaving Mary sobbing and clutching at her tattered dress.
Oh, the humanity!
Another woman, who wished to remain anonymous, was attacked the next evening right down the street from where Mary was accosted. She said that when he ran away, he jumped in front of a carriage and was nearly run over, but the driver of the carriage veered away, crashing into a building. The man then jumped over a garden wall that was twice his height in a single bound. She said that he never stopped laughing from the moment he grabbed her until she could hear his chuckle fade away as he fled the scene.
Whereabouts in London were these attacks? If this dude was in 1887, I'm pretty sure that it was just the next year that Jack the Ripper's reign of terror happened. You have to wonder if this is just how the Ripper started until having a quick fondle was no longer enough for him to get his jollies.
So these attacks were pretty much all over London, but a lot of them were in the East End. So...
who knows?
Yeah.
The Mayor of London, Sir John Cowan, received a letter. The letter was from an anonymous source. They claimed that they knew someone who was from the highest ranks of life, and that this person had made a bet with another rich person. The bet was to visit various places in London and dress as a ghost, a bear, and a demon. The writer claimed that this person had succeeded in multiple attacks while wearing the ghost, bear, and devil disguises.
This story was reported in the London Times. An alert was put out for this madman in disguise. Within a week, Sir Cowan had received hundreds of letters from all over London of reports of the attacker. Most of the letters were false reports, but a few of them held water with the mayor and what he already knew about the attacker. One report was from a woman named Jane Alsop. Jane said that she was home alone in her home one night when there was a knock at the door. The man at the door stood in the shadows. He told Jane that he was a police officer and asked if she had any spare candles.
A man of the highest rank of life, posing as or maybe even truly a cop. These are all things the Ripper has been surmised to be. Just saying.
The man told Jane that he had detained the man that the newspapers were calling Spring-Heeled Jack, and that he needed a light source since his lantern had broke during the scuffle. Jane quickly retrieved a lit candle from the hall and handed it over to the policeman. The man took the candle from her and threw back his cloak.
A freaking cloak!
Revealing to Jane that he was not, in fact, a policeman at all. Jane said that his appearance was both hideous and frightful. She said that his eyes were two balls of fire.
Was it Mr. Hyde?
He opened his mouth and sprayed blue and white flames into Jane's face. Jane said that he then dropped the candle and began to tear at her nightgown and the flesh underneath with claws like metal.
Okay, this is starting to sound a little far-fetched, don't you think? But then I guess maybe he had taken a mouthful of some fuel or other and spat that in her face, igniting it with the candle. The right fuel would burn those colours. And it was 1887, so when he asked for a light source, he knew what he was going to get. A flame.
Jane began to scream, and Spring-Heeled Jack just fucked off right into the night.
9 days later, Lucy Scales and her little sister were walking down a dark alley alone. The two girls noticed there was a large cloaked figure leaning against the wall in the darkness. As they got closer, Lucy approached the figure for a better look. Why would you do that, Lucy?
Why?
You're a supple young woman in a dark alley in the 1800s in London. For fuck's sake. So yeah, Lucy approached the stranger in the darkness and got a face full of blue flames for it. According to Lucy's sister, who was perhaps the smarter of the two and didn't get so fucking close, Lucy dropped to the ground immediately and began to shake. The reports say that she had a fit that lasted hours.
Sounds like a seizure to me.
That or maybe he was also a master of the bean and gave her a quick flick as he ran off, leaving her to shake in a state of orgasm for hours and hours.
Jesus Christ, Daniel. God damn it. Fuck. Spring-Heeled Jack did not attack Lucy or her sister any further. He just blew fire at her and then fucked off into the darkness. Okay, so not long after this, a guy called Thomas Milbank was chilling at a pub called Morgan Arms, and he was bragging to everyone that he was Spring-Heeled Jack. Thomas was immediately arrested but never prosecuted because when he was questioned, he said that he could not breathe fire.
I mean, that makes sense.
But Jane and Lucy and Lucy's sister all claimed that Spring-Heeled Jack could, in fact, breathe fire, so Thomas was set free.
Hello, hello, hello. Do you or do you not know how to breathe fire?
Nope, nobody can breathe fire. That's crazy. That's impossible. I'm not a bloody dragon.
Right you are then. Cheerio.
Okay then, I'm totally not going back to my secret lab where I store all my fire-breathing liquids.
So, it's actually quite possible for a human to spray fire out of their mouth. Thomas, or whoever Spring-Heeled Jack was, could have easily done this. All they needed was access to a fuel such as paraffin or kerosene. Next, you need a torch. Or something that is already on fire, like a candle, perhaps. Now, take a deep-ass breath. Like, fill up those lungs with air, okay? Now, pour some fuel into your mouth, but don't fucking swallow it, dumbass. Make sure you wipe any fuel that might be on your chin and lips off with a clean cloth, okay? This is important, and if you can't figure out why, then you should not be trying this shit. Go home. Just kidding. Don't leave. But don't try to breathe fire if you don't have damn brains, okay? Or if you're accident prone like me, don't do it.
And don't light your Sambuca if you're this stupid either.
Okay, so the fuel is in your mouth. Turn your face hole towards the fire source and blow the fuel out like really fucking hard. And pretend your mouth is a power washer.
Like Autumn's mom.
Pretend your mouth is a power washer and the fire is your enemy. Spray the flame up and away from your body so that you don't light yourself on fire. And that's the basics. You're welcome. Don't try this at home alone, though. Have someone with you while you play with fire, please. Safety third.
That, or if you're gonna try it at home alone, make sure you tell at least 5 friends about 7 circles first. At that point, honestly, you're expendable. But we do hope you make it back without any severe burns.
All right. Thomas Milbank could have been Spring-Heeled Jack. Or he was probably just bragging for the attention. Who knows?
I often brag to people that I'm a rapist. How else do you make friends?
But these attacks did go on for a long time.
How long? Because again, this dude sounds pretty ripperish to me.
There were reports of attacks for about 60 years.
60?
Yeah.
60?
Yeah.
60?
And the attacks always had the same MO, and always with a huge response from both the press and the London police forces. Pretty soon, the story of Spring-Heeled Jack spread to other towns and countries outside of London, and people started to see him in those places too. It got to the point that any strange character that seemed out of place would be reported to be Spring-Heeled Jack. There was a report of a man leaping around a canal in Birmingham. The police...
Did I not pronounce that correctly?
It's fine.
Birmingham.
It's Birmingham and Edinburgh.
Shut up.
Carry on.
The police apprehended the man only to find out he was a spring jumping champion called Joseph Darby.
What's going on here then? Can you jump over 9-foot walls?
Why, yes, but I do it for sport.
Oh, all right then, on your way.
So Joseph Darby could leap over high places because this was just his job. He was an athlete. Jumping over a 9-foot wall would not be something that an ordinary man could do, unless...
You build a pair of boots that have springs attached to the heels to make you jump higher. They would be tough to walk around in, or even run in, so maybe you could just have some kind of built-in mechanism on the heel that releases the springs only when you need them. So like, Spring-Heeled Jack is fucking off into the night, and he goes to jump over a wall and clicks his boot heels together, or some other whimsical shit, which releases the springs and send him flying into the air. Of course, this sounds like total nonsense. At least for the 1800s anyway.
But today... On Amazon, you can buy a pair of shoes that are supposed to enhance your jump. They are $150 and are called Jump 99 Ultra Strength Plyometric Training Shoes.
Well, okay, but it's 2022 and these still sound like total nonsense.
Indeed. They have these silly little platforms built into the bottom of the fronts of the shoes. They are supposed to make you be able to jump 10 inches higher than normal. They are also supposed to make you run faster and increase your calf mass and definition.
No doubt. There is also a shoe that costs $300 and they were banned by the NBA in 2010. These were designed by a company called APL and are reported to legit increase your jump height by as much as 4 inches. Worth it. They don't look very impressive, but if they were banned by the NBA, they must be legit, right? Because, you know, what stupid shit does the NBA ever do? I mean, obviously they'd ban a shoe that allows you to kneel 4 inches lower, but that goes without saying.
But Neither of these shoes increases your jump height to the point of leaping over high garden walls in one bound. So even if he was a time traveler, Spring-Heeled Jack would not be able to acquire the technology he needed to accomplish this feat. I think he steampunked himself a pair of jumpy boots. What do you think?
I think if he was a time traveler, he wouldn't be limited to the technology we have in 2022. So your point is moot and your question is absurd.
Fair enough.
But yeah, sure. Steampunky jumpy raping boots.
He didn't actually rape anyone, though. He just kind of attacked them and tore their clothes and scared people.
And kind of felt him up a little, so it's still kind of rapey, right?
Yeah, technically.
So, Spring-Heeled Jack made his way into pop culture. They began to write plays about him in the late 1800s. He even appeared in many Penny Dreadfuls. If you don't know what a Penny Dreadful is, let me tell you. They were these little booklets that you could get that had spooky stories in them. Kind of like creepypasta, only instead of being read by 14-year-old girls on the internet, these stories were being passed around by many Londonites. Londonians? Londonish? London folk?
Londoners, Autumn. Londoners. It's very simple. Londoners.
Thank you.
A few of the Penny Dreadfuls had made up this backstory for Jack. They called him the Marquis, and said that he was a rich socialite who had too much time and money on his hands, and this was inspired by the third Marquis of Waterford. Henry de la Poor Beresford was not your typical London-y boring stuffy rich guy. What the fuck, man? Why would you write that and then make me read it, you stupid American?
Because, like, rich London dudes in the 1800s were all like, ho ho ho, I got some tea and crumpets.
And even before this Penny Dreadful even came out, he was thought by many to be the real Spring-Heeled Jack. Henry partied a lot. He partied so much that the phrase paint the town red ever even came about. And I had to verify this little factoid, and it does appear likely.
Thanks for that fact check, Daniel.
So, Henry was out drinking all night at a pub with many of his friends. He drank a lot this night. I mean, he drank a lot every night, but this night he was like, shots, 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 shots. Soon, the group left the pub and wandered into the town of Melton Mowbray.
Oh, God, I miss Melton Mowbray pork pies.
I said it correctly, dude.
I miss pork pies so much.
I want a pork pie.
Oh, they're so good. I'll give you another kind of pie later if you want.
They stole some red paint and just started painting the buildings with it. Yeah, drunkenly slopping various shades of red pigment onto the beautiful facades of downtown Mowbray.
Henry was also known as the Mad Marquis and one day painted a horse's hooves with aniseed and hunted it down with hounds, which is an interesting concept. It's like that suggestion that if you put mustard on a cat's butthole, it will run until it dies.
That's a thing? What?
You've never heard that?
No!
It's like if you feed rice to a pigeon or a seagull, it'll explode.
Oh, I knew that one.
Henry was never formally accused of being Jack, though. And after a while, reports of his attacks stopped, but his legend turned into one of the first urban legends.
Mothers would use the story of Spring-Heeled Jack to keep their daughters from roaming the streets at night. The boring ones, who didn't want to get molested in dark alleyways anyway. They would tell them that when they were younger, their friend from school was attacked by Jack, and that they should beware because he was still out there.
Yep. For decades, he was seen as the boogeyman of London and would be used to strike fear in the hearts of children. Using fear as discipline, huh? Great parenting tactic.
Also, it seems weird, given that a year after Spring-Heeled Jack came on the scene, London saw the beginning of the reign of Jack the Ripper, one of the world's, if not the world's, most famous serial killers. Also, what's with all these bad guys getting called Jack? Who was the first Jack who gave all Jacks such a bad rap?
Jack be nimble.
Jack be quick. Jack jump over the candlestick.
Yeah,
Wait.
That guy.
So yeah, I actually looked this up when we started looking at Spring-Heeled Jack, because I knew that little nursery rhyme. And now we've also talked about candles.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I knew the jumping part
Oh,
the Jack part, but now there's a candle as well. But seemingly, That little nursery rhyme has nothing to do with Spring-Heeled Jack.
Did the nursery rhyme come out before or after?
Come out? Yeah, so it was an album by... come out, for fuck's sake. Oh, God. Anyway, yeah, apparently nothing to do with it. But okay. I was surprised and a little bit disappointed because that was the first song that I ever learned to play on a musical instrument. The recorder.
Oh, geez.
Because I'm just that fucking cool, man.
I almost bought a recorder the other day at the dollar store.
I would be able to play it for you.
So anyway, nobody really knows who this Spring-Heeled Jack dude was or why he was attacking random women in the night. Or why he would just blow fire at them and wreck their clothes and then run off. It's pretty weird. Some people say that he could have been an alien. Or a soup.
A what?
A superhuman person.
Oh, okay. We're just going to go ahead and start using terminology from the boys now, are we?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, whatever's socially relevant right now.
It's socially relevant to your mom.
Revelant?
Revenant.
Repent. Resonant. Represent.
A lot of people think he was a demon. We, or I, think he was just a bored rich dude. Instead of going Batman with all his gadgets, he used his power for evil.
Wouldn't you?
No, I would not do such a thing.
No, you're so nice.
I am a nice person.
I mean, he didn't really use him for evil. It was more like trickery or mischief. Was this Pan? It was Pan.
Or Loki.
One of the old gods come back to wreak havoc.
All right, let's talk about another Jack.
Since you mentioned Batman, we must be talking about Jack Nicholson next, right?
No.
Jack Johnson? That annoying hippie singer dude whose songs all sound exactly the fucking same?
No.
Jack Black? Multi-talented actor and musician with penile strength second to none?
I mean, we could, but we're not.
Jack White. Must be Jack White. That other musician dude who was banging his sister, kinda.
He wasn't really banging his sister. He just told everybody that she was his sister, but in reality, that was actually his wife. Anyways.
Yeah, but we all knew he was banging her.
Yeah, but it wasn't his sister, though.
But it was when we all knew he was banging her.
Gross.
Giggity.
No! So, you may not have heard about Spring-Heeled Jack, but you have probably heard about the aforementioned Jack the Ripper. We are going to talk about him and possibly spew forth some facts about this Jack that you perhaps didn't know.
So, we are going back to London, and it's around the same time that good old bouncy Jack McHello, darling, show us your tits, was doing his thing. However, there's also a killer on the loose on the streets of London. This guy went by many names before Jack the Ripper was set in stone. They called him the Whitechapel Murderer, Leather Apron, Saucy Jack, or Saucy Jack, as people from the East End would call him, and eventually Jack the Ripper. We like Saucy Jack, though. It's a shame that one didn't stick.
Saucy Jack!
Saucy Jack!
And his little black pudding!
Why? His black pudding?
I don't know. It rhymed with Jack.
Oh, Jack's black...
Jack's black pudding!
In the fall of 1888, Mary Ann Nichols was to become his first known victim. She lived in the Whitechapel Parish in the East End of London. This was known to be one of the more crimey areas of London at the time. It was an overcrowded, low-income area with terrible housing and even worse working conditions. The Cabrini Green of the 1880s, if you will. In this part of town, there were loads of brothels and pubs, though, so I guess they were having a good time.
Did you say there were loads of brothels and pubs? Because there still are many of both, my dear. Trust me.
Cool.
So, it's the wee hours of the morning on August 31st. A guy called Charles Cross was on his way to work over on Buck's Row. On his way, he found a woman lying on the street face down with her skirt raised above her head. Another passerby, called Robert Paul, approached the woman with Charles and they investigated. They tried to shake her awake, but she was unmoving. They assumed she was passed out drunk. This was something that happened a lot in the East End.
You gotta stop using the past tense, dude. The only thing that has changed about it is that now you can't buy a one-bedroom apartment for less than a couple million.
Gentrification, bitch!
So, they just pulled her skirt down and both of them continued on to work, saying that they would alert a police officer if they encountered one.
So, they found this chick face down, ass up, with her skirt over her head, and they just walked away? Didn't even poke her with a dick to see if she was alive? Sorry, stick. Who would poke her with a dick? That'd be weird, right?
It was still dark outside.
So you're saying they should have poked her with a dick then, right?
No, Daniel. For fuck's sake. You're a vile human being.
It was still dark outside, and the streets were poorly lit, but somehow they did not notice that her throat had been slashed or the blood that was pooling around her. Sus. That's sus. But whatever. One of the men was able to send a constable named John Neal over to where her body was, and another constable called Constable Mizen joined them. A third constable showed up, saw what was going on, and immediately went to fetch a doctor. The doc pronounced the woman dead and said that she had been killed only a half hour prior to his arrival.
Okay, so hear me out. Face down, ass up, still dark, and she was still warm? So now would you have poked her with a dick?
I think there's something wrong with you, sir. The woman was Mary Ann Nichols, a sex worker who also went by Polly.
Hooker!
In the weeks that followed, locals brewed up this story that her killer was a local Jewish man called Leather Apron. There were a lot of Jewish people in the area, and anti-Semitism was pretty abundant around them parts. The newspapers picked this story up and ran with it. A man called John Pizer was arrested that September. He was a Polish Jew who worked as a shoemaker, and sometimes people called him Leather Apron. Can you guess why he got that clever nickname?
Because he was a cobbler?
Because he wore a leather apron.
Because he was a cobbler?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad we cleared that up. John did actually have a prior conviction for a stabbing attack, so the police were on it. But John Pizer had an alibi. On the night that Mary was murdered, there was a fire at the London docks. Police remember seeing John amongst the onlookers at the fire, which lasted until about 2:15 a.m. Which is kind of fucking weird, because even back then, it's not like London was a small place, and they're just like, oh, hello John, how you doing, Governor? Anyway, John then went to a hotel and paid for a bed. He hung out in the hotel kitchens until about 4 a.m, and then he was seen going to his room. He was in his room until 11 a.m. This alibi ruled him out as Mary's murderer.
The second killing happened on September 8th. The body of Annie Chapman was found in a Danbury Street backyard by an elderly resident.
Did he poke her with anything, just to be sure?
Yes.
Was it his dick?
No.
Was it... What was it?
His cat.
He poked her with his cat.
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
No.
Anywho.
So the old guy flagged down the police and they came to investigate. Annie's throat had been cut and she had been stabbed multiple times in the belly and breasts. The connection to Mary's death was immediately clear to the investigators. Annie had also been disemboweled and her intestines had been torn out of her and placed on her shoulder. That's so weird. Her uterus was also removed and never seen again.
Well, this was in a time before fleshlights, so what's a man to do?
Gross. Oh my god.
What?
That's disgusting.
You've never fantasized about jacking off with a uterus?
No.
Like... No.
Okay, all right.
Kink shaming.
Yeah, I mean, now I feel bad for thinking about that.
Yeah, you should feel bad. That's pretty gross, dude. All right.
The murder weapon was determined to be a long knife with a long, narrow blade, possibly a post-mortem surgical instrument.
What the fuck did they perform autopsies with back then? It's like, oh, here's your claymore, doctor.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
It was also concluded that the killer had knowledge of medical practices and that he might have gone to medical school or even been a doctor. After the two murders and the capture and release of Leather Apron, letters and postcards came pouring into the police stations. These were all from Londoners who thought they had important information regarding this killer. There were also many letters that alleged to be from the killer himself. One of these letters, addressed to the Central News Agency of London, is now referred to as the Dear Boss letter. And this is what it said.
Dear Boss, I keep on hearing the police have caught me, but they won't fix me just yet. I have laughed when they look so clever and talk about being on the right track. That joke about Leather Apron gave me real fits. I'm down on whores, and I shan't quit ripping them till I do get buckled. Grand work the last job was. I gave the lady no time to squeal. How can they catch me now? I love my work and I want to start again. You'll soon hear of me with my funny little games. I saved some of the proper red stuff in a ginger beer bottle over the last job to write with, but it went thick like glue and I can't use it. Red ink is fit enough, I hope. Ha ha ha. The next job I do, I shall clip the lady's ears off and send to the police officers just for jolly. Wouldn't you? Keep this letter back till I do a bit more work. Then give it out straight. My knife's so nice and sharp, I want to get back to work right away, if I get a chance. Good luck. Yours truly, Jack the Ripper. Don't mind me giving the trade name. Wasn't good enough to post this before I got all the red ink off me hands. Curse it. No luck yet. They say I'm a doctor now.
And this was how he became known as Jack the Ripper. So at first, this letter was deemed to be bullshit along with all the rest. But in the letter, he said that he will clip a lady's ears off the next time he killed. And guess what happened next?
Did he clip a lady's ears off?
On September 30th, he claimed two more victims, Elizabeth Stride and Catherine Eddowes. Elizabeth Stride was a sex worker, also known as Long Liz. Guess how she got that nickname?
Was she from Thailand?
No, she was just really tall.
Oh, okay. So she wasn't a ladyboy with a really big dick?
No, Daniel. She was last seen at midnight in the company of an unidentified man. Her body was discovered 1 hour later at Dutfield's Yard on Berner Street. Her neck was cut, but she was not further mutilated. Some say that he was not able to finish cutting her up because he was interrupted, and this is why he found a second victim so soon after.
So, after midnight, Catherine Kate Eddowes was walking the streets of London. Yeah, I bet she was walking the streets. Fucking streetwalkers over here. Giggity. She had just been released from jail for drunken behaviour. Kate was last seen alive in Mitre Square at 1:30 a.m. in the company of an unidentified man. Kate was discovered by a constable. He was from just down the road in Clapham Junction, and he had a penis that wouldn't function. So to poke her, he just used his truncheon. None of that is true.
What the fuck is a truncheon?
You don't know what a truncheon is?
Please tell me what a truncheon is.
That's like the little, like, stubby baton that police officers carry.
Oh my god, that's terrible.
Yeah, that's a limerick that my father would often recite when I was a child. So you know you can see why I am the way I am. Anyway, Kate's neck had been slashed and her body had been severely mutilated. Her intestines were taken out and placed on her shoulder. Again, because, you know, shoulder guts, why not? Her face was cut up. Her left kidney and part of her uterus were removed, because I guess he still had the last one to jack off with, and the uterus was never to be seen again. Giggity. And her assailant also cut off Kate's right ear, and this is what convinced authorities of the authenticity of the Dear Boss letter.
And then the cops received a postcard. The handwriting was similar. It said,
I wasn't codding, dear old boss, when I gave you the tip. You'll hear about Saucy Jackie's work tomorrow, double the event this time. Number one squealed a bit and I couldn't finish straight off. Had no time to get ears off for police. Thanks for keeping last letter back till I got to work again. Signed, Jack the Ripper.
Saucy Jackie!
Saucy Jackie!
Saucy Jackie!
Saucy Jackie!
Blackie Puddings!
What the fuck, man?
I mean, I fucking love black pudding, and I miss it almost as much as I miss a good, proper fucking curry. And a good pork pie, yeah. I mean, honestly, food in this country is fucking garbage, and it makes me very sad. But why the fuck do you keep bringing up black pudding, man? You didn't even like it when I made it for you that time.
No, it's pretty...
I say made, like I fucking boiled up some pig's blood. I cooked some for you that I procured from a place.
So black pudding, for our American listeners who don't know what it is, it's basically like a pig's blood sausage, and it tastes very...
piggy.
Yeah, it's just... it's not very good. I liked the first few bites, but the more I kept eating it, I was like, this is not good stuff.
Okay, so you take pig's blood and you season it with seasoning, which I am not familiar with, and you throw in some diced up pig fat and some onion, and then you boil it down until it starts to congeal, kind of like a scab. Once it's congealed, you can form it into a sausage. Once in sausage form, you can slice it and you can fry it until the outside goes kind of crispy, like a scab as well, I guess. Yeah, scab sausage. And it's just really fucking good. It's one of those things that sounds kind of gross when you hear how it's made, you know, like haggis. But if you taste it, it's actually really fucking good. And let's be honest, you all eat fucking wieners. What do you think goes in there? Lips and fucking arseholes.
Anyway... so the cops published a copy of the letter, hoping that someone would recognize the handwriting and come forward. But nobody did. Some of the cops thought that the Dear Boss letter and the Saucy Jack postcard were actually written by a journalist. Some of the local journalists had access to police records and such, so it was quite possible that they had sent the letters in to keep public interest alive. Or the killer was actually one of the journalists.
Indeed. In fact, in 1931, a journalist is reported to have confessed that he and a colleague at the Star newspaper, which to this day is one of London's more reputable news sources, had written the Dear Boss letter, the Saucy Jack postcard, and other hoax messages purporting to be from Jack the Ripper, a name they chose in order to strike fear and interest in the public in order to maintain high sales of their shitty newspaper.
But the thing is, the first letter came in before the ear was cut off, saying that he was going to cut off an ear. If the journalist had done that, then they would have had to have been the killer. That's just logic.
Oh yeah, no, don't get me wrong. I'm just stating what I read. I'm not necessarily saying that I believe the journalists had sent those letters. I am probably of the opinion that, yeah, they were legit and they did come from the man.
And then there is the third letter. This was sent to a George Lusk and it was marked as From Hell.
Ooh, you said it! You said it! That was a good movie, right?
No, it was you quite didn't boring. Like it?
What? Wasn't that Johnny Depp and the fucking chick from Heather Graham? Heather Graham!
I have not been able to sit through that whole movie.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it perhaps because I've been on Jack the Ripper tours in London and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've been to all these places. I used to play darts tournaments at the pub in which Jack the Ripper supposedly lived.
Yeah.
If people think they really know who Jack the Ripper was. But, you know, it's kind of my old stomping grounds. I've seen all these places. I've been to all these places.
I've always found him to be quite boring. He only killed 5 people. Like, what's the big deal? There's, like...
True. But was he not technically like one of, if not the first serial killers?
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, and he was pretty brutal with it too.
True.
You know, you got to give the guy his dues. And
yeah.
He fucking jacked off with uteruses. Uteri.
He did not do that. Okay. So George Lusk was chairman of a vigilante group called the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee. And the letter said...
Mr. Lusk, sir, I send you half the kidney I took from one woman, preserved it for you. The other piece I fried and ate it, and it was very nice. I may send you the bloody knife that took it out, if you only wait a while longer. Sign Catch Me When You Can, Mr. Lusk.
The handwriting in this letter was not the same as the first two, and there are also some phonetic misspellings. The kidney was examined and proved to be human, but they had no DNA testing back then, so who's to say where it even came from?
How many kidneys does your mum have?
I think she still has both of them.
Oh, okay. I just thought it might have come from her. You know, she was probably around that time.
The last known victim of Jack the Ripper was Mary Jane Kelly. You're such a dick. God damn it. She was a 25-year-old Irish girl and the youngest by far of all his kills. She was killed inside of her home and not on the street like the others. Her body was found by Thomas Bowyer, her landlord's assistant. Thomas came to collect her rent and noticed that she had a broken window. He walked up and poked his head inside.
He poked with his head?
Mary Jane's room.
Not with his penis?
Was covered in blood. On her table, he noticed piles of meat. At first, his brain told him that it was just regular animal meat. Mary Jane's body was on her bed, and it had been so badly mangled that she no longer looked like a person. Thomas looked back to the table, and then back to the bed. And then back to the table, and then back to the bed. And then it clicked. And then he screamed.
Some people are just little pussies, aren't they?
I mean, some people in the 1880s had not been desensitized to things yet, so yeah, maybe they were.
I feel like they were probably more desensitized to the gross things in life and the grotesqueries of the world, don't you?
I guess.
You know, just because they didn't have fucking torture porn to watch.
I mean, they got to watch people hang in real life.
Exactly, this is kind of my point.
Yeah.
Anywho.
So this is what Chief Surgeon Dr. Thomas Bond's report about the crime scene had to say.
The whole surface of the abdomen and thighs was removed, and the abdominal cavity emptied of its viscera. The breasts were cut off, the arms mutilated by several jagged wounds, and the face hacked beyond recognition of the features. The tissues of the neck were severed all round to the bone.
Thousands of people were interviewed over the course of this investigation, and over 100 leads were followed to no avail. And the citizens of London were super pissed that the police could not catch the Ripper. Over the years, different people have put forward different suspects. There are over 100 possible Jacks, but nobody can seem to point the finger at just one. Let's talk about a few of the interesting suspects here real quick. Prince Albert Victor Christian Edward, known as Eddie to his friends, is one of the most famous suspects in the Jack the Ripper case. He was born in 1864 to Prince Albert Edward, who would later become King Edward VII. This is a quote about Prince Albert's character from a dude called James Pope Hennessy.
Even his nearest and dearest, who were naturally bent on making the best of poor Prince Eddie, could not bring themselves to use more positive terms. Prince Eddie was certainly dear and good, kind and considerate. He was also backward and utterly listless. He was self-indulgent and not punctual. He had been given no proper education, and as a result, he was interested in nothing. He was as heedless and as aimless as a gleaming goldfish in a crystal bowl.
Fuck. I mean, that's a pretty fucking gnarly burn for the 1800s, I tell you what.
Fucking goldfish.
Yeah, I guess that's some kind of a burn, yeah.
Nobody suspected the Prince of the Murders back then, but in 1970, a dude called Dr. Thomas Stowell published an article called A Solution. It created a sensation by his veiled accusation of Prince Eddie as the killer. Stowell apparently used these private papers of Sir William Gull as his primary source material, and it was these papers that led him to devise his theory. Throughout the article, the killer is referred to as S, but there is enough internal evidence to identify Eddie as his chief culprit. Sir William Gull was a famous physician, and it is believed that he knew who Jack was, or that he was Jack himself.
The latter seems more likely, given the medical training. Sure, I could navigate to and remove most of your organs, Autumn, but such things were not common knowledge back then.
Dr. Thomas Neal Cream was born in 1850, and he grew up to be an abortionist.
That must have been a fun procedure to undergo in the 1800s, especially by a dude called Dr. Cream.
Dr. Cream.
Dr. Cream.
And he wasn't very good at it, and ended up killing a bunch of women on accident.
Which is arguably better than how the USA is currently doing so on purpose. But anyway...
Dr. Cream then took up poisoning people on purpose. He was arrested a bunch for murdering folks and released a bunch. But he just kept on poisoning people and then started to brag about it. He was finally sentenced to hang to death in 1892, and his last words were, "I am Jack." He was not Jack, though. His MO was completely different. Also, he was in jail at the time of Jack's killings. But he is still on the list of suspects. I don't know why. It's dumb.
I mean, we're just going on the assumption here that Jack was one man. Dun, dun, dun. Another suspect, James Kelly, was born in 1860. He grew up poor, being raised by his grandmother. She told him that she was his mother, though, and he believed this until he was 14. When he was 14, his birth mother died along with her husband. They had no children, so all of their shit was left to James. About $25,000 worth of shit, to be precise. In today's money, that's a fucking fortune. So James was super pissed that his grandmother had lied to him about his birth, but he was super stoked to be rich. However, the money was to be held in a trust until his 25th birthday.
So James went to college and ended up becoming a pawnbroker in Liverpool.
Liverpool!
Here, he began to see sex workers on a regular basis.
Giggity.
Then, he meets a woman called Sarah Brighter, and he falls in love. They get married. Sarah is a virgin.
Giggity.
Until this moment, he had only had sex with sex workers and had no understanding of how a woman's body works. Apparently, neither did she, because they couldn't figure out how to get it in.
Well, she was a virgin, so why would she? But, you know, just spit on it. Spit on it and shove it on up in there.
Since he had no previous issues with the bangins, he blamed Sarah and told her that her vagina was fucked up.
Wow, like he got the Holy Grail and squandered it like a fool.
I mean, a simple talk about the birds and the bees from their parents would have, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So James Kelly then becomes erratic and he begins to have mood swings. Instead of trying to bang his wife again, he just went back to the sex workers.
Giggity.
Then James gets VD.
Not giggity.
Instead of being treated by doctors, he decides to treat it himself. Sarah finds his whatever drugs he was using to try to treat his VD. She finds this and confronts him.
How would you try to do that back in the day? I mean, antibiotics were not a thing, or if they were, they only just had been invented. So what was he doing? What was he shoving in his piss hole?
I really couldn't find any details. I just know that there were syringes involved.
Oh,
yeah.
Syringe to the piss hole. That doesn't sound fun.
So she finds this and confronts him. He accuses her of tricking him into marriage to get his inheritance. The next day, on Sarah's birthday, he tries to stab her with a carving knife.
How do you only try to stab somebody?
Well, he did not succeed because her parents saved her. So, like, he came at her with a knife and her parents were like, no!
No!
A few days later, they try to reconcile, but he goes into a rage again and stabs Sarah in the neck multiple times with a penknife. Sarah dies.
James is then sent to Broadmoor Psychiatric Hospital in 1883, which actually remains in service to this day, and an ex-girlfriend of mine worked there. Anywho, in 1888, James escapes Broadmoor somehow with another inmate. And here is why James Kelly is the best suspect that we have seen so far.
Do you want to know how he escaped?
Well, fucking obviously. Why is that not in the script, Autumn?
Because I forgot to add it. I didn't think you would want to know.
Yeah.
So James took up playing the violin, and he would just play the violin in the garden because there was a garden at this hospital. And him and the other inmate would like just hang out in the garden all the time, where they found pieces of metal on the floor of the garden, and they crafted a key out of the random pieces of metal and made a key and just walked the fuck out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
definitely worth including. Thank you for telling us. That's good.
Welcome.
I don't know why that wasn't in there. Anywho.
So he was diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic. He had shown himself capable of murder with a knife. His reasons for murdering his wife were his belief that she was a prostitute and had infected him with VD. Having been dissuaded of this idea in Broadmoor, he would almost certainly have realized that the real source of his infection was the prostitutes of Whitechapel and Spitalfields. Perhaps he resolved to take his revenge on them for destroying his life. And his movements after he escaped from Broadmoor are unverified. In 1927, he turned himself back in at Broadmoor and died 2 years later.
Well, in fact, Kelly wrote memoirs that were since accessed by investigators for a Discovery Channel documentary. In these memoirs, he does not outright confess to being Jack the Ripper, but he does express a hatred of prostitutes.
Which is weird, because they're great.
Sex workers.
Hookers. Also, in his own personal diary, he confirms that after escaping Broadmoor in 1888, he had hidden in London between the months of August and November, which just so happens to coincide exactly with the dates of Jack the Ripper's murder spree.
Huh.
Yes.
To further corroborate this, Kelly moved to America after his escape, and while there was a number of slayings of prostitutes with the same MO as those in London.
Shut up.
Yes. A letter was also addressed to a newspaper in which the anonymous sender declared himself to be Jack the Ripper and threatened another murder spree. This letter was sent not long before the murder of sex worker Carrie Brown in a New York hotel room on April 24, 1891. Carrie is, quite rightly, considered to be another victim of the Ripper, and therefore, James Kelly.
Wow.
Kelly returned back to the UK in 1927, almost 40 years after his initial escape, and checked himself back into Broadmoor. He was old and dying and losing his eyesight, and said that during his long stay in the United States, he devoted himself to fighting against evil. Which is exactly what a total fucking nutjob would say they were doing if they were murdering hookers who they thought had wronged them so. So yeah, here at Seven Circles, we think Jack the Ripper is one James Kelly.
Solved it. We solved the thing.
Well, somebody else solved it. We disagree with it.
Yeah.
Indeed. Albeit, Lewis Carroll's name was even thrown out there as one possible suspect.
Well, he wrote Alice in Wonderland and its sequels, so I guess we could confirm he was possibly a little bit unstable.
Also, in 2019, two UK universities found new DNA evidence that was supposed to come from the fourth victim's shawl.
Was it come?
Yes, Daniel, it was come.
Wait, I don't like come. I just like delivering it.
Okay.
I like to be the issuer of come.
Sure.
You mean sure?
So the shawl was removed from police evidence and given back to the family after the victim's murder. Ultimately, the shawl was bought at auction in 2014 and a DNA test was ordered. The DNA matched the descendants of a man called Kosminski. Aaron Kosminski was a barber who was arrested in a workhouse in 1890 due to claims of violent behavior with a knife. He was sent to Colney Hatch Asylum and was known to hear voices and show other signs of paranoia. In the end, he was transferred to Leavesden Asylum.
I've been there a few times. We used to go hang out there at night. Maybe I'll show you the pictures later on.
You already showed me the pictures.
Well, maybe I'll fucking show them to you again then.
I've seen them.
It was a much newer wing than the one I suspect Mr. Kosminski stayed in and had been used for unwell kids. Outside in the playground, somebody had hung a wheelbarrow upside down from the kiddie's swing set and spray-painted the word RAPE on the side.
How clever.
Not really, but the first time I went there, we crawled under a fence to get in there, and like as we approached this swing set and just saw the word RAPE, and in the middle of the night, man, like 3 in the morning, dark as shit, I shit you not, Autumn, up in the trees, an owl just went, woohoo! And I, for one, was definitely fucking creeped out.
Anyway, Aaron had homicidal tendencies and a deep hatred for women. But the thing about the shawl, though, is that it was never documented as evidence. The police had the shawl briefly, but for some reason gave it back to her family.
Not to mention, it belonged to one of Jack the Ripper's victims. That part is confirmed, and she was a prostitute. So let's be honest, the likelihood of the cum all over this shawl necessarily being Jack the Ripper's is slim to none. Like, this shawl was basically this chick's cum catcher, a dirty old prozzer's cum rag. So yeah, maybe Aaron Kosminski was Jack the Ripper, but our money is on James Kelly.
But I don't know. Nobody knows. So do you still think that Jack the Ripper and Spring Hill Jack are the same person?
You know what? Having gone over all this now, I don't think that I do, no. I mean, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that that really wasn't the case. The timing was a little bit off. The MO clearly was very off. But, you know, like you said, it could be that he just started off that way and then progressed into the more brutal things. But overall, no, I don't think that they are one and the same. What do you think?
No, I don't think they are, but it's fun to, like, you know, toss around those ideas in your head.
I like to toss ideas around in my head. I like to toss, and I like to have ideas of uteruses.
Okay, you tosser.
Yes, I toss with...
black pudding.
Wow.
Your black pudding fleshlight.
I mean, you know, when it's the right time of the month, I put it inside you for long enough and then pull out. I guess I kind of have a black pudding fleshlight.
God damn it. Okay.
The end. Thank you for listening.
But wait. It's time.
Time
it's
for what?
Time.
Oh, we're not doing that anymore.
Oh, yeah, we're fucking doing it.
We're not doing Roll Podcast.
No, we are. We skipped it for an episode because it was fucking stupid okay. And then it still wound up murdery and rapey. And you still fucking mentioned Cabrini Green, but we are doing it. Let's roll for podcast. Oh, yeah, can you hear that, peeper? It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. Alrighty, so what are you hoping for this time? Give me a number that you're hoping for me to roll.
Five?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of interesting, maybe. Yeah, I guess.
3, 2, 1. What was that, 6?
That's a 6.
The Playboy curse.
What is that about?
The curse of the Playboys.
Okay, well, it sounds like it could be fun.
It's going to be lots of titties.
Ooh, I like those.
Yeah.
They're my favorite.
Yeah.
Other than buttholes.
Okay.
Well, thanks for coming.
See you next week.
See you next week, you sexy bastards. Thank you for listening.
We appreciate you.
If you like us, you can come support us on Patreon at 7 Circles Pod.
We are an indie podcast, and without your support, we would not be able to do this thing that we love.
Everything was written, produced, edited, and mixed by us, Autumn and Dan.
Thanks to Caroline Gates for the artwork and Null Machine for the music.
If you have anything to say to us about this episode, come say hi to us on the social media.
We are currently on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for 7 Circles Podcast. That's the number 7, not the word, plus circles like the shapes.
7 and circles. Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, slap some chicks with your black pudding dick.
Do you want to build a snowman?
And put your icicle in my butt.
God damn it.
Would you like to freeze my sphincter?
Oh, jeez.
Come on, Jack Frost, put it on me.
On you or in you?
I want your snow all over my face hole.
Give me that frozen jizz.
Ooh, yeah, we could make a creamsicle.
Oh my God, is there frozen porn?
I would like to think not. Based on their ages, but...
I mean, like, adults.
It's rule 34. Yeah. You said in a previous episode it's rule 43, but I saw it today because somebody had made alien porn. That would be the alien porn.
Yeah.
And it was rule 34.
Okay.
I
knew it was a thing.
What do you think would happen, like, if you mix, like, blood and cum and then make a black pudding? Would be like a kind of a... It'd be kind of like a milkshake black pudding, right? Don't look at me like that.
It's fucking gross, man.
You know you like it when you make milkshakes.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard.
And it's the grossest substance by far as it dribbles down your legs to your calves.
Calves?
Calves.
My calves.
And onto your feet and toes and onto my carpet.
That's enough.
And then we get the dog to lick it up.
No! We're doing a really bad job here. Let's just stop while we're ahead.
But we were going to talk about other jacks.
We already did that.
Okay, but what other jacks are there?
Little Jack Horner sat in a corner eating his pudding pie. Pussy! Jack and the Beanstalk.
Oh, that guy was cool, yeah. And he was totally into giants, right? So he probably like crawled right up on in there.
Jack Frost.
Oh, fuck, we were going to talk about Jack Frost, yeah. What did that guy do other than, you know?
He was a snowman.
Was he? No, he wasn't actually a snowman, Autumn.
Like, was he a frost giant?
He was not a frost giant, no. Jack Frost was just a creepy-looking frosty guy. He wasn't a snowman. That's a more American Coca-Cola fucking type thing, yeah.
What is the ye old Jack Frost of London?
Of London?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, we just Googled it, and there's some creepy Jack Frost, there's some snowman Jack Frost, and apparently he was in some Disney movie with the Frozen, he was in Frozen.
Yeah, I suspect he wasn't very creepy in that.
No, he was quite cute, actually.
Would you like to build a Jack Frost?
Would you like to suck my penis?
That's what he's saying to the other Frozen girls.
That's what he's saying to, like, 8-year-old girls in a Disney movie.
I mean, it's Disney, so sure.
Would you like to suck my icicle?
One of the Jacks were there.
Jack Torrance.
Who's Jack Torrance?
The Shining.
I mean, that was Jack Nicholson, right?
Yeah, but he played a character called Jack Torrance, you fucking ingrate.
Yeah, but we already covered this dude.
No, we covered Jack Nicholson, not the character of Jack Torrance.
Jack. Who else? Jack Jones. Who's Jack Jones? That sounds familiar. Is
that Nora Jones's brother?
Ooh, Nora Jones. Yeah, baby.
Jack from Lost.
Jack from Lost. Oh my God, yeah. Who the fuck is that honky? Wait, can you say honky?
Yeah, we can say honky. We're white.
You can? Mm-hmm. Wait, what? We can say it. We're white?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We just did a whole ass fucking episode about racism.
No, those are the rules.
Then bitched about it.
No, those are the rules.
Are they, though? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. So we can say honky, but we can't say cracker.
Oh, we could totally say cracker because we're crackers.
We can?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't feel right with this, Autumn.
You don't have to feel anything, Daniel.
Are you telling me not to feel my feelings?
Yeah, stop feeling things.
Fuck you, cracker.
Okay. Bye now.
Would you like to build a car, man?
Oh, God.
Ho, ho, ho. I got some tea and crumpets.